So, the last few weeks, probably the last month, we've been talking about a Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Chaf Gimel Amud Beis. We actually went on to Kuf Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph last week. But this Gemara is fundamental to understanding what we call Mukta. But what we'll see today is maybe not as clear, because the Gemara discussed about what we call Kli Shemalach Tol Heter, Kli Shemalach Tol Iser, and when and how one is allowed to move it. We didn't really emphasize or focus too much on the how part, but we saw a little bit about machlokas between Rava and Abaye, about two hands or two people carrying things, that kind of thing. But more in terms of the when or situationally, when are you allowed to move things? And we saw this was all based on a Gemara or a Braisa in the Gemara about the Gezerah of Nehemiah. This is actually at the end of the Gemara, or the original Gemara that we saw, and it's at the end of the first source that you have here. The second to last line in the middle of the line says, Amar Rabbi Chanina. I don't know if you see in the last source. Amar Rabbi Chanina, Bimei Nehemiah ben Chachlaya, Nishneis Mishnah Zil. This braisa that we just quoted, this sort of corpus of discovery that we just went through in terms of Rabbi and Abaye and disagreement, that was based on Nehemiah's teaching. He saw the people carrying things when they shouldn't have been carrying them. And then he decided that it must be stopped. It must be decreed against. Now, I'm going to ask you what sounds like the simplest question in the world, but it's actually very fundamental to understanding this Gemara. When did the Jewish people start keeping the halachos of Mukta? When was the Hilchos Mukta, the Isser, to move things that you're not allowed to touch on Shabbos? When was it instituted? We know the Gemara tells, or we know that we talked in our introductory classes right after Sukkot. We spoke about how Midaraisa, there is an aspect of Shabbos which is, you know, the activities are sort of bona fide, absolute, biblical prohibitions. But there's an aspect of Shabbos which is not as well defined as the 39 Malachas, and that is the word Shabbos. The word Shabbos. How do you define the word Shabbos? Is it the refrain from Malacha alone, or is it also something else? Is it beyond that? Does the word was the word Shabbos or something else? What? Yeah, the word Shavuos. That's what we call it, Shavuos. Is Tishbos? Was it Tishbos? I don't know if they darshan the word Shabbos or a different word like Tishbos. I don't remember. But the point is that how do you define that word? And we saw that some of the Rishonim actually believed, I think the Aruch HaShulchan sounded like this, that the Isser of Mukta was actually included in the Isser Daraisa or the Mitzvah Daraisa of Tishbos. That when Hashem says, you shall rest on Shabbos, what it means is, not just don't light a fire, but it means you should have a different way of acting on Shabbos. You shouldn't touch things you don't typically touch. You shouldn't do things that, even if they're not part of the 39 Malachas, you still shouldn't do them on Shabbos. So, when we say, hello, Hildy. When we say, hi, Hildy. When we say that Mukta might be included in that word Tishbos, then the question is, well, who defined it as such? Meaning, yes, the Torah says the word Tishbos. It says you shall rest on Shabbos. But who's to say what that resting means? There are some times in the Torah where we have the rabbis fill in the details, right, to tell us when it is and when it isn't something. So, and some of that's halacha Moshe Mitzinai. Some of that Moshe Rabbeinu came down with it from Har Sinai and said, hey, when Hashem says tefillin, this is what he means. And he shows them a box, tefillin, right? But there are other aspects of it which are maybe only later defined or subjectively defined. So when does Mukta apply? Almost certainly it applies in times of the Beis HaMikdash. Almost certainly there's a concept of Mukta in times of the Beis HaMikdash. So when we say that Nehemiah established this decree, I'm going to ask a strange question given how we've assumed for the last month. When we say Nehemiah said the Jews can't touch anything, right? They're not allowed to touch anything except for, what was it, the spoon and the ladle, right? Remember those three? There's one other one, the fig cake slicer, knife, whatever. or the table knife, the cake knife, and the ladle, right? The skimmer, right? The skimming ladle, which, by the way, the Achronim, I did look into it. The Achronim actually discussed why isn't that a Boreg question, but
yeah, okay.
We'll get to it. I mean, maybe I'll look into it so that I can have an answer for it, but I saw that somebody asked the question. Either way, so when we said this Gemara, and Nehemiah decreed the Jewish people can't use any of these things. Now, we just assumed, because we're giving a class on Muktzah, that he was expanding the category of Muktzah. That there were certain things you weren't allowed to do on Shabbos, and there are certain things, because there are certain amalachas, then there are certain things that are classified as Muktzah, items that you shouldn't touch on Shabbos, and then there are these other things, which were technically okay. Technically, you could, as it's saying here, you could take, you know, barrels and carry them, you know, from one place to another. Wasn't necessarily muktzah. What's so muktzah about a barrel? There's nothing particularly muktzah about a barrel, except for the fact that it's a kli shemalach le'eser or kli shemalach le'ezer, depending on how you use the barrel. So comes Nehemiah and says, this is how we've been understanding it, that this is an expansion. Muktzah meant this, and Nehemiah came and said, let's push it out to expand and mean this. That's how we've been understanding it. But we could understand it otherwise. And this sounds, and when I read it myself in the Rishonim, it sounded like a distinction with no difference, that maybe this was a separate decree. Maybe this was a separate decree. It wasn't a Muktzah decree. It was a Kli Shemalach le'ezer decree. Nehemiah came along and made a new category. Not one time. Take for a second. I'm not sure. I don't think so. Look through it quickly. Not one time in this Gemara did it use the word Muktzah. Not one time in the Gemara did it ever use the word Muktzah. Now, there are a couple indications in one direction or another, but we'll see them as we go. So this is our question. We've been talking about Nehemiah's decree. When he saw the Jewish people weren't keeping Shabbos properly, he said, you can't touch any utensils, except for these. You can't touch any utensils, right? So when he said that, was that a muktzah decree or was that an independent decree? Now, as I mentioned before, you might think, well, what's the difference? Who cares? We'll get to what the difference is. We'll get to whether or not a muktzah or not muktzah is going to dictate not just what Nehemiah was doing, but what we have to do today. We'll see that in a second. Let's look first at Rashi. Rashi tells us in source number 2. For those with it, this is a Rashi in a far-off place, Daf Lamed Hei Amud Beis. It's nothing we're doing today. It's nothing we've been doing recently. But nonetheless, Rashi has an interesting phrase. Chatzotzros. What are chatzotzros? The trumpets. What do they look like? Straight. Pshuta, says Rashi, they are straight. That's pshuta means straightforward, or pashut like simple. Pshuta means straight. And therefore, ve'ena ru'uya ela litzkoa. What do you use these trumpets for? Just for blasting, just to make a sound. And therefore, are musical instruments allowed on Shabbos? It is an interesting question. Why? Not going to get into it. But therefore, have a davar shemalach to l'isr. If, by the way, you classify that isr as an isr d'rabbanan, so it makes it more interesting how to understand kli shemalach to l'isr, not only as isr d'araisa, but also isr d'rabbanan. If you didn't understand what I just said, don't worry about it, but it is very interesting. Think about it. Says Rashi, have a davar shemalach to l'isr. What's a davar shemalach to l'isr? That's what we've been talking about. Rashi is calling out or is referencing the Gemara that we just did on Kuf Chav Gimel Amud Beis. Says Rashi, Davar Shemalach L'Isser, V'Aser Mishum Muktzah. Rashi clearly tells us that these items that we've been talking about, this entire concept that Nehemiah decreed you can't touch these vessels, that was an extension of Muktzah. You would put that under the Muktzah banner. If you're writing a book on Muktzah, that would be in it. Now it happens to be that every book that ever writes about Muktzah talks about Kli Shemalach le'ezer. But the question is whether we would classify it halachically as Muktzah. Would it be in the Muktzah section or would it have its own section of Kalim? Maybe there's the Muktzah section and there's the Kalim section. And in the Kalim section, there's Kli Shemach L'Isser, Kli Shemach L'Esser, there's the Tzarech Gufo, Tzarech Mekomo, and the Chama L'Tzel, what we've been talking about. According to Rashi, no. It's in the Muktzah section, right? It might have different caveats to it, when you can use it, how you can use it, what's the definition of the thing. But it's still considered Muktzah, the things that you're not allowed to touch. Okay, now let's move to be more precise. And while the Gemara doesn't use the word muktzah, it used the word tiltul, right? Kol hakelim nitalin chutzmi masar agalo, etc. Right? All of the items are moved. That's a muktzah word, right? The word tiltul, the taltel, tiltul muktzah, that's a muktzah word. So while it doesn't say the word muktzah, it doesn't even say, you know, mekasidato or hiktamidato or something like that. Nonetheless, it uses the other indicator. Use the other buzzword of tiltul. According to Rashi, muktzah is including these items. This is similarly brought down in the Rush. Here's a wonderful introduction to muktzah we could have used, but I only saw it today when I was looking into this topic. This is the Rush in a tshuva. I don't remember. I didn't look at the question. I didn't look. It's a long piece, and I only looked at the beginning because I knew it had this phrase in it. Be'inyan hamuktzah yesh arba dinim. Who is the Rush? I know that paper was floating around somewhere. I don't know if I had the Rush on it, did I? Yeah, I mean, he was mostly Ashkenazi, but he lived in Sephardic Spain at the end of his life.
I don't know where I saw it floating around. I don't know. I have it online, obviously, but what was the Russian, who was the Russian's Rebbe? Naomi Ruttenberg. Ruttenberg was the town in Germany. So the Russian was certainly Ashkenazic.
And then his son is the Tor. His son grew up more in Spain than he did in Ashkenaz. So he writes the Tor, but it's somewhat Sephardic leaning, which ultimately becomes the Shulchan Aruch of Rabbi Yosef Cairo, who was also Sephardic leaning, and then you have the Ramah, fine. So the Rush is Ashkenazic, and in some ways he's representing the Ashkenazic point of view, but in other ways he is the predecessor of the Shulchan Aruch point of view, right? Because his son, the Tor, is the blueprint of the Shulchan Aruch, so he's an interesting character. Either way, this is a tshuva that he writes. Hamin Harishon, there are four categories of muktzah. Okay, the first category, and it's good, it's nice to see that he starts off with this category because that's the one we started off with, even though nobody else did. So I was influenced by the Rush here, but the first category, Hamin Harishon Davar Hamukteh Machmas Gufo. That's not the same thing as Zoterach Gufo. It says the same word, but it's a different thing. Things that are mukta because of themselves. They are by nature things you don't use. Like what? Ka'avanim, stones. Ve'etim, branches, wood, trees, good. Umaot, money, coins, good. Uchiyot Ibrahim, it is interesting to point out that money is not something which is, it's not something that you could do an Esther D'Oraisa with. But with wood and with stones you could build. But that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. Muktzah Mamash is a different category. And Muktzah Mamash has to do with things that you're not going to use on Shabbos at all. And there's no purpose, there's no use to them. They are by default unusable. Why are they considered to be entirely useless? She'ein lahem toras kli. They are not categorized as a vessel. Could you use them for things? Of course you could use them for things. But because they have been undesignated, because they are undesignated, just pieces of nature, sitting outside, so they are considered useless until you make them useful. And the only way you can make them useful is either by designation or by preparation to make them into some kind of vessel. Okay, so that's category number one. That's muktzah mamash, that's muktzah machmas gufo. The thing itself is useless. Number two, and this is perhaps the most obvious type of muktzah, hamin hasheni davar hamuktzah machmas isuro. Things that are muktzah because they are usur. What's usher about them? A pen. I think a pen. Kigon ner shehi liku ba ba'osa Shabbos. If there's a candle that's burning, right, that candle is mitzvah because it has potential iser involved. If you move and you extinguish it, that's going to be an iser deraisa. Uchigon truma temeya v'tevel. Things you can't do anything with them on Shabbos, and using them would be aser. V'chol davar shemechubar, and anything that's attached to the ground, bein hashmashas at the onset of Shabbos, v'nitzlash, and on Shabbos was uprooted. U'mechutzar seda, and animals which are untrapped, v'nitzot, that which are trapped, v'chein kis sheish b'malot, and also a wallet that has money in it. That's an interesting one. What's so problematic about the money? The iser is, I guess, mekach memkar, to doing business. That's an iser to Rabbanim. Interesting, but okay. V'chein kli shenas abasas davar amukta. We'll talk about abasas later. Fine. That's category number two. Things that are mukta because of the associated prohibition. That's imminent, the imminent prohibition. Hamin hashlishi, the third, and this is, I don't even know if we're ever going to talk about this, to be honest. Mukta machmas mitzvasa. There's a specific kind of mukta which is, because it's designated as a mitzvah, you can't touch it. The most common example of that is a sukkah. You can't take things on a sukkah because they're designated for the mitzvah, and as long as they're designated for the mitzvah, you can't use them for any other purpose. There are other examples. Anyone know other examples of that? Say that by... sort of, there's an aspect of that by Neros Hanukkah. You can't use them for anything else. Typically, this concept of Mukta Machmas Mitzvah only applies while the mitzvah is being observed. Right? So it's very hard to have a Mukta Machmas Mitzvah because most mitzvahs are instantaneous. Right? You pick up a lulav, you're done with the mitzvah. So there's no Mukta Machmas. There's a little bit of Mukta by an esrog, I believe. I believe there's a mix by an esrog. But yeah. Anyway, so that's the topic unto itself, and it's interesting that he even brings it up. But then he says, the kicker, v'hamin harivii, the fourth category, hamukta davar hamukta machmas melachto, because of its use, klomar sheyesh alav melechas iser kikornas hanafachim uchiyos behem. That's a hammer. How is that different from Mukta Machmas Isser? Because the Mukta Machmas Isser is something which is already Usser, meaning there's something that it's doing which is Usser. The candle is lit. To touch it would be a potential prohibition. These things are not Usser. These things are used for Isurim. A hammer is used to build. Right now, there's no imminent prohibition. It's just a hammer. But nonetheless, it's Usser. This is referring to kli shemalachtul iser. Hamen revidavar hamukta machmas malachto. And by the way, it's not necessarily a malachas iser. It could be malachas heter according to Abaye. We don't paskin like that, but according to Abaye, it could get more complicated. What are the three things that according to Rava you're allowed to use a kli shemalachtul heter for? Right, three categories that we saw. The Torah, Gufo, the thing itself, right, this is a napkin holder. You need to use it as a napkin holder. The Torah, Mekomo, its place, or Mechama Lassel, to protect it. Right, according to Rava, right, Rava was the second one? Yeah. According to Rava, a Klisha Malachal Lehetzer is allowed for those three categories, those three reasons. Let me ask you a weird question. What if you don't have any of those reasons? Let's say you've got a napkin holder. You don't need it. You don't need its place. And you don't need to protect it. Can I just play with it? It's got a fun little, some of these napkin holders are very fancy. I've seen some napkin holders that have like holders, and you got these little bars, and you put them down, and you hold the napkins down. I want to play with it. Am I allowed to play with a napkin holder? I don't know. Kli shemalachto laheter. It's called laheter, but it's laserach gufo. Do I need it? Is anything you ever do with it something which is a tzorech a need? What if I don't need it at all? It just happens to be on the table. I want to fiddle with it with my hand. Am I allowed to do that on Shabbos? Is there an aspect of Kli Shemalach Kol Hetzer, which is Aser? Meaning Rava said all categories are Mutter. Well, those categories are only Litzorah. Those are only for necessities. Let's say it's not a necessity. So we don't know that for sure. So when the Rush says Sheyesh Alav Machmas Malachto, that they're Mukta because of their use, does that include only Kli Shemalach Kol Hetzer? That's what it sounds like for the next few words. Does that include only Kli Shemalach Kol Hetzer or also Kli Shemalach Kol Hetzer? Even the napkin holder or just the hammers? What is he talking about? That's not for us right now. But the point is, for us, as Rashi said, the Rush calls this Mukta. He calls it Mukta. He puts it in one of the four categories. Kli Shemalach Kol Hetzer is one of the four categories of Mukta. According to Rashi, according to the Rush, this whole decree of Nechemya is expanding the category of Mukta. Again, you don't necessarily see why there's such an importance of understanding what's what, but suffice it to say, there's going to be a difference. Okay? So we'll hold on to that for right now. For right now, Kuf Chav Gimel Mabez, that we've been focusing on last month for this class, which is learning about Mukta, is part of Mukta. So no need to worry. Did Rabbi Cash just waste a month out of our Mukta class talking about something which is not Mukta? Rashi and the Rush believe, no, it is Mukta. It is Mukta. Don't worry about it. Your class can learn it. But now let's look at the Ran. And this is a sentiment echoed not only by the Ran, but also the Ravid and also the Ritva. Many of the Spanish rabbis, the Ravid was not technically Spanish, but he lived in between Ashkenaz and Sfard, so he kind of, he's Rochev al Shtei Susim, as they say. He rides two horses. He dances at two weddings. Okay. This is the Chidush HaRan, but it's also called HaMiyuchas L'Ran. A lot of these books were, found only later. They were unattributed. So through context clues, we thought it was the Ran, but it's not really clear. Someone once published it as the Ran, but then we came upon the actual Chidush HaRan, and there are different words. So this is called the Miyuchas L'Ran, the one that was attributed to the Ran, but might not be the Ran. Who could it have been? We don't really know. The Ran, I think, had a brother. The Ra'a could be, I don't know if that's the same person, but there's another Ramah. I think it was later, though. Some people suggest that the Sefer HaChinuch was written by a 12th century Spanish rabbi. So maybe it's him. We don't know who wrote this book. But this is the Miyuchas L'Ran. There's another book on Shabbos called the Ran. Different books. So he says, the Ela Amar Rabba, Karnish on the Fakim, etc. That's referring to the hammer. This is actually earlier on Kuf Chav Beis Amud Beis. A daf before. Okay, let's move down to the third line. The third line is source number four. Umihu. You see it there in the fifth word? Umihu, however, Vadai Nira. Da afilu le Rabbi Shimon de Leisle Mukta Modehu Bekalim Shemalach Dol Ester. That is such a loaded phrase. What does Rabbi Shimon have to do with this discussion? Let's put our thinking caps on for a second. Who is Rabbi Shimon? If you remember in our introductory classes to Mukta, we had a fundamental machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon.
Are we assuming in general thing for Mukta or is
Rabbi good? Rabbi Yehuda believes yesh Mukta. Rabbi Yehuda believes everything is default Mukta. Everything you see, your entire house is all Mukta. Unless you deprogram it. Unless you say, I'm using this thing, I'm using that thing. Rabbi Shimon says, Leisle Mukta. There's no such thing as Mukta. Everything's good, fair game. Except for those things that are particularly unused on Shabbos. Now, in 95% of cases, they agree. Everything is either, right? This chair, according to Rabbi Yehuda, maybe default it's Mukta, but everyone uses chairs. So naturally we deprogram it. According to Rabbi Shimon, it was always Mukta, right? This phone, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's Mukta, because everything's Mukta. According to Rabbi Shimon, it wasn't Mukta, but because of how we use it, because it's expensive, so because you put it away, so that makes it Mukta. Right? So almost all cases, you know, it's basically that they always agree. I would even say 99%. 99% of cases they agree. But there are some cases that maybe they don't agree. There's a similar machlokas about, which people like to quote in drushas, between, I think it's Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, about how do we classify a sukkah? Is a sukkah a diras keva, or is a sukkah a diras arai? Do we look at a sukkah halakhically as a permanent dwelling place, or is it supposed to be a temporary dwelling place? Now, you and I all both know, diras arai, that's what a sukkah is, a temporary dwelling place, not just how it looks, but that's how we pass them too. So the question is, do they disagree about all these different types of sukkahs? No, really don't. It's like one or two cases about like the sukkah on top of a camel. Is that considered a sukkah or not? Okay, like random cases, maybe a sukkah on top of a boat. I don't remember. Most sukkahs, they'll look at the same sukkah and they'll say, oh, that's Diras Kevin. The other one will say, oh, that's a Diras Arai. They'll just look at it and say it's something else. Right, so same thing with Rabbi Huda and Mishima. They'll look at the phone and they'll say, is that Musa? It was. It still is. Or it never was, and now it is. Right? So they're looking at the same thing, it's just how they got there. Okay? So now, the Ran, allegedly the Ran, says that even Rabbi Shimon, who holds that default is no muktzah, even he agrees to the Gemara we've been learning the last month. We never asked this question, because we just assumed it was part of Rabbi Shimon too. According to Rabbi Shimon, he believes there's no such thing as muktzah. So let me ask you, when Nehemiah comes along and makes this decree, what does Rabbi Shimon think about it? Rabbi Shimon holds there's no such thing as muktzah. As we just said from Rashi and the Rush, what did Nehemiah do? He came and said, here's the stuff that's muktzah. I'm going to expand it to include this stuff. Says Rabbi Shimon, you can call whatever you want muktzah all day long. I don't care. I don't hold of muktzah. There's no such thing as muktzah. That hammer, not muktzah. Right? That napkin holder, not muktzah. I don't hold of muktzah. So the question then becomes, well, does Rabbi Shimon hold of this decree from Nehemiah? If you're going to call it muktzah, I don't care. Call it muktzah from today to tomorrow. Rashi, the Rush, you can call it muktzah. Rabbi Shimon doesn't care because he doesn't hold of muktzah. If you call it muktzah, Rabbi Shimon you can take the entire daf out of the Gemara. Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold of muktzah. So he doesn't even look at this Gemara. Right? He skips from 122 to 124. He just skips right over. It's not even relevant. There are other parts of the Gemara also, but fine. You got my point. Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold of muktzah. So if you're going to tell me that this decree of Nehemiah was extending muktzah, so then leave me alone. Rabbi Shimon says, I don't care. That's a Rabbi Yehuda question. Rabbi Yehuda, oh, you're talking about muktzah. You're expanding what muktzah means. Okay, that's for lahavdil. You know, someone says, oh, we're expanding Social Security. I'm not using Social Security right now. You can expand it all you want. It doesn't matter to me. Right? It's not affecting my life, so. I'll send it to someone who cares. I'll send it to Rabbi Yehuda, who cares about muktzah. Hey, Rabbi Yehuda, they extended muktzah. I don't know if you saw the news flash. Nehemiah said there's more muktzah around. Here you go, Rabbi Yehuda. I don't care for it. I don't hold the muktzah. Right? I don't get Social Security, so I'm going to skip over that article. Right? So the same thing here. So if you hold that it's muktzah, like Rashi in the Rush, Rabbi Shimon's like, next pass. I'll go to the next stop. Says the Ran, no. Says the Ran, Rabbi Shimon cares about this Gemara too. That's what it's saying here. Miuvada near da feels the Rabbi Shimon the leisay muktzah. Even Rabbi Shimon who holds there's no such thing as muktzah. Moda who bekalim b'shem alach ben lister. He agrees with Nehemiah's decree. Wait a second. Why? Why does he agree to Nehemiah's decree? He holds that there's no muktzah. Shehein asur in the tatz l'sarach mekomo mecham alzel mark diusay. Whichever one you hold, the rabbi or nabaye. Mark Disley is a phrase, by the way. That's a universal phrase. It basically means you according to your opinion, you according to your opinion. Mar is a person, you know, Kidisley as it is to him, and his opinion as it is to him. So, rubber a bias, fine. Why says the Ran, listen to these words, Delav Mishum Mukta Nagu Bahem. Nehemiah, when he made this decree, was not extending the classification of Muktzah. It's a brand new decree. Nehemiah said, we've got this, we've got the Malachas, we've got the Muktzah stuff, and now we have the Kalim category. It's a different book. It's a different chapter. It's not the same concept at all. Rabbi Shimon looks at this daf and he says, oh, Kalim, I never thought of that. Maybe we should outlaw Kalim. Maybe there is something about Kalim that we should restrict. It's nothing to do with my Muktzah stance. I don't hold of Muktzah, but I might hold of Kalim. That's what the Ran is saying here. It's not a Muktzah issue that Nehemiah decreed. Ella, I don't know if you're still with me here. Ella tiltulhu she'asru b'shabbos b'dvarim she'ein tashmishan ragil. It might sound a lot like Muktzah, but the reason why they decreed it is they made it prohibited to use things that people don't typically use. It's a decree. You typically don't use a hammer, so you're not going to use a hammer today. According to Rava, you might use it, fine. Right? Every item is different. But the point is, Nehemiah came along and said, these Jewish people, they're using things that they don't need to be using today. They're using things that they typically don't use. This guy is going over there to his shed and taking out a saw. What are you using a saw for? It's Shabbos. You shouldn't be playing with a saw, even if you're going to be using it. And you're not going to be doing it, Esther. You shouldn't be playing with a saw, says Nehemiah. I'm outlawing things that you don't typically use. Those are things that aren't relevant for you on Shabbos. And it went through those different stages that we talked about last week. But that's nothing to do with Muktzah. Muktzah is this thing where we're worried maybe you're going to come to do an Isser with it. Maybe we're worried that if you pick up the pen, you're going to come to write with it. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about items that are just not Shabbistic. Just things that are Shabbistic. Of course, a pen's not Shabbistic because you can write with it. That's one of the activities you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. These things, you could use it for bad, you could use it for good, or allowed, not allowed, whatever. It's a separate category. Says the Ran, allegedly, this is not a Muktzah situation.
Simply because it's infrequently used?
Yeah. Just things, klishim, lachim, lisser. How often do you use your hammer? It's in your shed, right? It's in your toolbox. You come to it maybe a couple, once a month. You're using some work around the house or something. And because of that infrequency, and because of it, the fact that it's stored away, as we saw from Rashi and this Gemara originally, 5 weeks ago, right? It's set aside. You put it in a specific spot. Okay, so don't touch that on Shabbos. That's not a Shabbos tool. Now, it happens to be that Rava comes along and says, well, if you need it, you can use it. If it's Tzarech Gufo or Tzarech Makomo, you can touch it. You can move it. But default, it's not usable. Not because it's Muktzah, but because of Nehemiah, right? So it's not that it's Muktzah, that's why you can't touch it, but it's a klisha machzel ister, that's why you can't touch it. Right? It's an interesting distinction. And you might still think, well, who cares? How do we paskin? Does it matter if we say it this way or that way? You'll see soon. Okay? I think I want to try to finish this paper today. So let's see. Says the Ran, this is on Chav Chav Bey, so he's saying, later in our paragraph, this is what that means. As it is, Kizisa, Likaman, later on, Bipirkin is our chapter. Yeah, exactly. Bipirkin is like Bipir. Yeah. Bipir, how do you say that? Biprakenu? That's a weird word. We don't usually use that word. So he's saying that, and that's what he's referring to the Gemara on top, the last line of the Gemara, where it says in that pasuk in Nehemiah, that he saw them carrying these things from one place to another. He's like, whoa, 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 whoa. You shouldn't be carrying that stuff. You might go outside of the school, whatever. So that's what it means to be Shem Hotza'ah. You're going to take it out. Let me see if we need this. Okay, it is interesting to look at the next part, but I don't think we need it for the aspect of what we're talking about today. Similarly, if you look at the Gra in source number 5, now the Gra is not a Rishon. But he's often put up against Rishonim, just because he's the Gra. Gra doesn't play by the rules. Or we don't play by the rules when we talk about the Gra. He was a certain exceptional rabbi in the 18th century, a couple hundred years after the Rishonim, and oftentimes he is not shy about disagreeing with the Rishonim.
And therefore, sometimes we can look to him to understand Gemara's also. The dafka b'kli shemalach d'leser she'eno muktzah. This is talking about, I could test you on this. If I was in like a group of smicha guys, I would test them on this. Yoredeya. What's Yoredeya about? Where's the halachas of Shabbos? In which of the four books of the Shulchan Aruch is it in, right? We've got Choshen Mishpat, we have Evin Ezer, Choshen Mishpat is civil law, Evin Ezer is relationships, Yoredeya is Basar V'Chalav, Shchita, a lot of Isser V'Hesser as we call it, Orach Chaim is day-to-day laws. Which one of those four would you say is Shabbos? Orach Chaim. Shabbos and Orach Chaim. Everyone, that's the building blocks of our day-to-day life. That's Orach Chaim. So why is this coming up in Yoredeya? So in Reish Samech Vav, these are the halachos of Bris Milah. What does that do with anything? Why is he talking about a muktzah in the halachos of Bris Milah? Let's say the Bris Milah is on Shabbos. Is the Moa allowed to take his knife? You should know, by the way, this is machlokas. How much? Now, obviously, he needs the knife for his bris. You can use it for the bris. What about after the bris? What if the bris is over? Is he allowed to move his bris knife? Is it a specialized knife?
Yeah.
You bet it is. You bet it is. So that would make it a muktzah machma chisaron kis. That is a valuable tool. That is a very valuable tool. It might just not just be financially valuable, but it could be an heirloom. It could be a specialized tool that even if the materials are cheap, the maintenance or the labor is not cheap. Right? So it could be valuable in different ways. So that's why he's talking about, are you allowed to move the knife on Shabbos? After the bris. For the bris, of course. For the sake of a mitzvah, but you have to on Shabbos, so it's good. Says the Gra, Didavka b'kli shemachtel iser she'eno muktzah. You're allowed to touch it because it's a klisha malachtel iser, right? You're cutting something with the knife, but it's a tzarech gufo. The tzarech gufo you're allowed to move. What did he say in between there? The klisha malachtel iser, she'eno mukta. She'eno mukta. It's not mukta. It's a klisha malachtel iser. Right. Because the knife is a kli, shemalach del iser, and it is not muktzah, that's why we have all these allowances. Isn't that interesting to point the way he points it out like that? Are you allowed to move a rock, letzorach makoma? No, we never said such a thing. Are you allowed to move a stick, letzorach gufa? I need the stick. I just need it. I need a walking stick. Can I pick it up? I need the stick, letzorach gufa. No. That's muktzah machmas gufo. It's muktzah mamish. Anything that's muktzah, you don't have caveats for muktzah mamish. If something's muktzah mamish, if something's muktzah machmas gufo, it's off limits. We never there's no gemara that talks about, oh, Rava says you could use it if it's a tzarech gufo. There's no such thing when it comes to muktzah mamish. If you've got stones and sticks, they're off base. They're off limits. Says the Gra, you know why you can move the mila knife? Because it's a kli shemalach del iser, it's not muktzah. And only by kli shemalach del iser do we have those caveats. If it was muktzah, if it was in the category of muktzah, like Rashi and the Rashi are saying, it wouldn't have those caveats. You wouldn't be allowed to do that. It's very interesting. It's very interesting to note. The whole premise of the Gemara has to be, according to the Gra, it has to be that it's not muktzah. Once you call something muktzah, you can't touch it. You can't touch muktzah things. I don't care if it's the biggest necessity in the world. Well, maybe not the biggest, if Pikuach Nefesh, but you got my point. I don't care if it's on your chair. I don't care if it's, if it's something you need to open the nuts with. If it's muktzah, you can't touch it. There are no allowances, caveats for muktzah. Muktzah is muktzah is muktzah. So it says the Gra, this is a different category. It's not muktzah. It's in the klisha machtel iser category. So there you have it. You have the Rashi, you have the Rush, you have the Ran. You have the Gra.
But then he next says,
"So that feel the Rebbe Shimon." You see this? At the end of the line of third number five, he's just going to say what the Ron said. De'afilu, that's that word. De'afilu, even Rebbe Shimon, Reish Shin, Rabbi Shimon, want to get that one?
Well, no, but he goes on to say after he said you can use it for itself or if you need it, like, but you can't move
well,
it.
Well, now the Tzarech, right. The Mechama will tell us to have a Shalot Tzarech because you don't need that. That's even according to Rava, right? That was what we said last week. And then he says, the Afil Rabbi Shimon, even Rabbi Shimon, Dalud Lamed Lamed, anyone? The yeah, lay slay. There is not to him. The lay slay mukta. Klau, even he who holds there's no such thing as mukta. Motive is that. He agrees to that.
Because
it's not mukta.
Okay.
Exactly. Just as the Rana said it. So here we have my focus. Rashi, the Rush, others, the Ran, the Ritva, the Rambam apparently, and the Gra all saying different things. On the one hand, we can say that it's Nehemiah was extending the category of Mukta. On the other hand, we can say that really, it is a separate category entirely. And that would explain Rabbi Shimon. Now, there are many aspects of this. You can go in either direction in terms of understanding in terms of finding sort of nuances in the Gemara that supports one side or the other. For instance, what was the Mishnah? Anyone remember the Mishnah? Or the conclusion of those three stages? The conclusion was, Kol HaKelin Yitzhalim B'Shabbos Chutz Mi?
Oh, it was a big sauce.
Meser HaGadol.
Yeah.
Meser HaGadol. Why was that, Mukta? Do you remember? We had said originally, Rashi says, because they were expensive and valuable. Wait a second, expensive and valuable? That's not a kli category, that's a mukta category.
Yeah.
There's no kli shemalachto chisaron kis, right? There's mukta machmas chisaron kis. There are things that are mukta because they're expensive and valuable. There's no such thing when Nehemiah said that. Nehemiah wasn't talking about that. So that would imply that maybe the kli shemalachto category is itself a mukta category. Otherwise, what does it have to do with the saw? What does it have to do with the blade of the plow? It must be that they're working within the same corpus, the same genre of mukta. On the other hand, we saw from the Gra, since when does mukta have caveats? Since when does mukta have, you know, allowances if you need it? Who says? We never have that. On the other hand, what about Rabbi Shimon? Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold the Nechemia. In Rabbi Shimon's house, they were just waving hammers whenever they wanted. This goes back and forth, trying to fit this decree of Nehemiah into this category or that category. And it goes back and forth, different proofs in both directions. What does this all matter? Who cares? L'halacha, we pask like Nehemiah. We pask in like Rava. Klishim l'achto l'isser, l'sar kufel, l'sar kombo. Fine. Klishim l'achto l'heter, for whatever you need. So if one, this is what, that's another way of saying, what's the nafkamina? I don't know if I've used that phrase enough. What is the practical ramification of this distinction? Who cares if you call it mukta or not mukta? Well, Rabbi Shimon would, but halakha l'maisa for us, why do we care? What does it matter tonight's class if you call it mukta or if you call it a separate decree? We're going to keep it anyway. So number one, maybe there's a difference in a kli shemalachto leheter, which has no purpose. Is that allowed or not? Now, we pass like Rabbi Shimon. Right, so for us, the default is everything's okay until it's deemed not okay. Right, so for us, let's say it's a napkin holder and I want to play around with it. Now, if you say that it's a mukta question, this thing is either mukta or it's not mukta. And Nehemiah told us that there are three categories, and Rava told us there are three categories of when you're allowed to use it, when you're not allowed to use it. Let's say, if it's a mukta category, if it's a mukta discussion, let's say that it's not one of those categories, it's none of them, but it's also not, you're not doing anything usher with it, you're just playing with it, and allowed to move it. If it's a mukta question, well, we hold like Rabbi Shimon, that things are not mukta until they're deemed mukta. So tie goes to Rabbi Shimon. If all else is equal, if we're going to, you know, resort to the default, then we're going to say you can touch it, you can move it. Similarly, let's say, and this is what the Prima Gadim talks about in source number 6, How do you define a kli shemelach to litzer? What's considered an item which is used for prohibitions? We said last week, what about a pot? Is a pot a kli shemelach to litzer or a kli shemelach to litzer? Sometimes I use it to store in my fridge. That's a kli shemelach to litzer. But then sometimes I use it to cook on the stove. That's a kli shemelach to litzer. How do you define that? What is a pot?
What?
Well, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. Right now we're trying to categorize all of these utensils. Let's say we're going around with a sticker chart like you do for milk inflation. You go with a sticker. Klisha Machel Heter, Klisha Machel Heter. I want to know if I can take this out of the sun. Right? Because we know, according to Rava, if it's a Klisha Machel Heter, you can't take it out of the sun. You can only do that for Klisha Machel Heter. So I need to know. I need to label all my stuff. So what label do I put on the pot? Not using it right now. What label do I put on the pot? That's a category for all time. Not relevant what I'm using it for most recently. Right? So, if you claim that this whole discussion is a mukta discussion, so then the default is lakula. We're going to be more lenient. Right? Because remember, if we say it's mukta, so then we go into the machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. According to Rabbi Yehuda, default is that it's mukta. So for him, if this discussion is a mukta discussion, so then for him, any item which is a safek, we don't know, is this a kli shemelach to leheter or is it a kli shemelach to lister? We're going to be machmir. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, he holds a mukta, the default is it's guilty until proven innocent. We're going to assume this is a kli shemelach to lister until you can prove to me you designate this thing as a kli shemelach to leheter. So if it's 50-50, it's gonna remain in its default position. The chazaka, right, the default is guilty, is mukta. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you define this discussion as a mukta discussion in the first place, Rabbi Yehuda would say that it's mukta. And if it's 50-50, Rabbi Shimon would say, innocent until proven guilty. We're going to assume that this napkin holder is a kli shemelach to leheter until you can prove to me that you're doing something very outer with it. Right? And we know for a napkin holder it is not. But let's say a pot. Is a pot leheter or leheter? According to Rabbi Yehuda, he's saying, I don't know, but I've got to assume that it's leheter. You've got to assume it's a kli shemelach to leheter. According to Rabbi Shimon, I don't know. Let's assume it's a kli shemelach to leheter. That's a big nafkamina. If we say that this discussion of Nehemiah is a mukta discussion, then we default to kli shemelach to leheter. If we have an item in our house today, this Shabbos, you find an item in your house, and you don't know, is this a kli shemelach to leheter or is it a kli shemelach to lister? Oh, don't worry. That Gemara that we learned in Kuf Chaf Gimel Amud Beis about Nehemiah's decree, that was a mukta discussion. And when it's a mukta discussion, so then we default to Rabbi Shimon. That is a kli shemelach to leheter. No worries. However, if we then say, this is not a mukta discussion, this is not our typical defaulting to Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda situation, but rather this is a separate decree. It's an independent declaration. As the Ron said, even Rabbi Shimon holds of Nehemiah. When Nehemiah said, all things are usher except for these. So he meant it, regardless of what you think about mukta. He meant it for anybody, for Rabbi Shimon, for Rabbi Yehuda. It doesn't matter. And then, when you look at it like that, we have to go into the Gemara. How did Nehemiah start? What was the starting position of Nehemiah? Everything's usher, except for the table knife and the cake knife. Everything's usher. Sounds a lot like Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda, right? Everything's usher. And then we went through the stages, right? Then Chazru v'hitiru, they allowed this thing, whatever, Rav and Abaye. Chazru v'hitiru, they allowed these things. And then Chazru v'hitiru, these things. So then it sounds like the other stuff, which is not in these strict categories, would be considered to still be usher. And the ad sha'amru is a complicated phrase, until they said everything is allowed to be taken except for those things. Well, what's included in those things? So according to that, according to the fact that there is a general default within Nehemiah's decree, that everything was usher until he made it okay, the only things that you can move are those things that are in those very specific categories. If it's a tzarach kufo, tzarach makomo, l'chami l'tzel, for a kli shemelach to leheter, or if it's a tzarach kufo, tzarach makomo, for a kli shemelach to leheter. But if it doesn't strictly, definitively fit in those categories, so you can't touch it. That's if you don't hold it as a mukta discussion.
It is a separate, independent decree. So according to Nechemya, within Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, if I have an item which is of no use right now, it's not with Zarakufa, Makoma, or Chamel itself. I just want to play with my napkin holder. Can I touch it? Can I use it? Not a Muktzah discussion. We don't default to say it's okay. This is a separate independent decree from Nechemya. Maybe not. It doesn't fall into one of those three categories. Right? Only those three categories would allow us to move that thing. This is not in one of those three categories. So maybe it's still lesser. And similarly, let's say you've got a pot, which is Klishma Machalizer or Klishma Machalizer. I don't know. So then we don't talk to Rabbi Shuvan and Rabbi Huda. There's nothing to do with them. They're not relevant for this discussion. What we default to is what Nechemya said originally, that everything's up there. In which case, we got to be machmir about the Klishma Machalizer. If you hold that this discussion of the last month is a Muktzah discussion, so we default to Rabbi Shimon to say that things could be lenient. We can assume things are klishim nachal heter. We can even assume if there's no tzorach, then maybe we can move it. But if we default, if we say that this discussion has nothing to do with Muktzah, and we say that this discussion has instead everything to do with an independent decree from the Nechemya, and even Rabbi Shimon will hold of it, so then we would default l'chamra. We would default to be more stringent about it. And that's Machlokas Achronim. That's Machlokas Achronim. We'll have to look. Maybe next week we'll look at how do we paskin in those cases? How do we look at this Gemara in the end of the day? This was somewhat of a fancy, very in the weeds. Hopefully you followed the whole thing. Somewhat in the weeds. How do you categorize this Gemara? This is what you would call pilpul. Right? How do you look, how do you understand the Gemara? That's what we've been doing for the last 5 weeks. How do we relate to Mukta in this way or that way? But how do you categorize that Gemara? What are the nafkaminas? You can look at it like this, you can look at it like that, and it'll have this ramification or that ramification, depending on how you look at it in those two ways. So that's called pilpul. That's how you take a Gemara, you dissect it, and it actually has a real effect on halacha l'maisa, on practical halacha. You know, some people, when they looked, there are different rabbanim throughout history, achronim, that would say, this pilpul stuff, it's all too theoretical, so it's very practical. Now, I'm sticking up for pilpul because that's how I was raised. I was raised with Pilpul. This is the whole YU Mahalach, the whole Brisker Salavishik Mahalach, is to really dissect Gemaras, understand them to their core, and then understand what the ramifications are when you understand them those ways. Mostly just Chumras, this way or that way. But the point is that when you look at Gemaras like this, you can really understand what's going on here. This is not just, oh, a nice story, Nechemya said they could use it, he said he could use everything. No, we have to understand the different elements that are going on in the story so that we can you sort of distill from it, how does it apply or not apply to the halachas of Muktzah generally. So that's this week. Mirzahem next week. We can with this background, look at the halacha and see how we paskin for items which are 50-50 or for items which are not any of those three categories of necessity. I just want to play with an napkin holder. Can I do that? Mirzahem next week. Continue the discussion. All right. Kind of in the weeds tonight. Hopefully you stayed with me. But we will hopefully do a review also next week and bring it into Halakha Maisa. Okay. I wish you have a good night.